Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. This is December the 16th, 2011, and I guess we're on a countdown now for Christmas. We'll be here before we know it. This whole year has really flown by, and I have no idea where it went.
Me either. It's up in the air.
It's floating around somewhere. Yeah. The time just, everything just seems to evaporate on us, because it's last I remember was last Christmas, seems like.
Yeah, I don't know if I remember last Christmas.
But it seems like been on the road ever since June, so that helped a lot of it evaporate. I lost the summer, I lost the fall. Here we are getting ready to go into winter, and it's like, where in the world did 2011 go to? So we're going to be traveling just as much, or not quite as much, as next year, but we've got a lot of trips already planned for the whole year. 2012 is just about packed solid now.
Yep, it is.
I don't think we can work anything else in.
I don't think so.
I'm going to many other countries, and they wanted me to come to South America, and Julie told them, I don't know how, there just isn't any room left in the whole year.
Right, it'll be the following year.
And they were they're disappointed because they hope to do it this year.
Right.
But
only so much of you, and only so much we can do here. So
yeah, I'm just one person. They haven't learned how to clone me yet, although I feel like sometimes they do. But I can just go to so many countries.
Well, we haven't learned how to bilocate either. That's our two options: cloning or bilocating. So
it'd be good if we could just all of a sudden be there, like beam me up, Scotty. You wouldn't have those long 14-hour flights. But this we've got a lot of other countries, and it's focusing more on Europe again. Now, we'll be in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been invited to go to Turkey. And she said, when they emailed, she had one weekend left open in April. And she asked me, how do you feel about going to Istanbul? So, it's a World Summit UFO Conference in Istanbul. So I said, I really need to go to that. And they're focusing on 2012.
Right.
And so that's going to be in April. So even though I have weekends off, and I think I'm going to be home for a while, they're filling up too.
Right.
More countries and more places we're going to. And we do have the cruise later this year, too.
Yes.
I guess we should tell them something about that.
Yes, that'll be...
It's in August?
That's a problem. No, it's October. It's the 1st of October.
Okay, because I know the end of July, I'm going back to Europe.
Right.
And then we're going to take the cruise as part of that, isn't it?
It's at the end. Yeah, it's at the end of that whole trip. So that gives you an idea of the trip. If we start the end of July and the cruise is the beginning of October...
Yeah.
So.
Usually in November I'm in Australia, but this year we're not going back to Australia this year in 2012.
Right.
But do you want to tell people something about that? Because we are going to be doing publicity if they want to sign up for the cruise.
It'll be on pretty soon. It'll be on the website very soon. We're finalizing the details. But I know part of it's in, in Athens. It starts from Rome.
Yeah.
And then I think one of the stops is Athens, and I'm going to be really there are places I don't know them yet. So, I mean, I don't know.
Israel.
No, it's not going over there now. It's an Eastern Mediterranean.
Okay, because we were going to go to Egypt, but because of all the upheaval they're having there, it's funny, the Japan was canceled because of upheaval, but that was the earthquake.
Right.
And this is political upheaval. It may be calmed down. But the ships are not going to Egypt. They're not planning the cruises.
Right. There were a lot of them that were just not planning them because of the Egypt part. So we decided to pick a cruise that didn't have Egypt in it so we could go ahead and get that planned. And then our contacts in Egypt, and we were looking at possibly doing just this tour just to Egypt, you know, after all of this. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but if people want to know about this, we will have publicity soon if they want to sign up for this.
Right. We'll have it on there soon. We're finalizing it, and I'm sorry to be dumb about it, but it's just they're names that I don't know, and that's why I don't remember
them. Well, there's so much happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we heard a beep. Is there a caller online?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Dolores. It's so good to hear your show. And I had a question because I remember that you had talked about the New Earth, and you had said that you had described that at some point the two Earths are going to separate. So I assume that you refer to a spiritual separation. Have you had any more insight about that?
It's not a spiritual separation. It is a real physical separation. This is real. This has nothing to do with spiritual. I thought we kind of covered that on one show, but maybe it's
Yeah, because you had the email with somebody asking that. I think it was two shows ago, but
yeah.
It always bears repeating.
Yeah, because in one of the emails, somebody wanted to know, was it a spiritual or was it a physical? And it is a physical thing that is happening, and we're in the middle of it right now. And people said you have to die to go to the New Earth. No, because when you first go, you will take your physical body with you. Then after we're over there for a long, long time, we'll turn into light beings. But it is a physical separation because the Earth is going into another dimension, and another, it's changing its vibration and frequency to go into another dimension. And as it does that, of course, it'll be vibrating at a different speed, and it'll become invisible to the old Earth. And the old Earth is where all the disasters and the wars and everything are going to be happening. And those are into negativity and who don't understand this, and they're not ready.
No, they're not vibrating at that frequency.
They will stay with what they have created. But he said it doesn't matter. Eventually, everybody's going to get there. But, you know, it is a very physical thing. But I don't know I have all the answers, because they told me even they don't have all the answers, because this is the first time in the history of a universe that a whole planet is going to move into another dimension. Does that kind of help you?
Yes, that clarifies a lot when you say it's a physical separation, because then you can look at some of the changes that are happening today. For example, when you talk about a new Earth, and many people talk about heaven on Earth, there are some signs that we may be reaching that. For example, in nature, we're seeing certain organisms that are causing algae to sparkle. For example, this happened, I think, in San Diego. I forget what it's a biological process. I can't think of what it's called right now. But it's called, in Australia it happened also, and it was called the Blue Lake. And we're seeing things in nature that we've never seen before. And there are great anomalies changes in evolutionary changes that we're seeing in certain species as well. And I'm not sure if there's a connection to that, or if it's a sign that this is that's the new... That might be part of the new dimension.
Yeah, most people aren't paying attention to it, and they don't even notice anything that's going on, you know, the day-to-day stuff. But if you really start watching and are aware, you will see these things.
Well, you know, if I might interrupt or interject, when you were saying, well, over there, and they were saying, it's here. We got to stop putting it out there and over there like it's yet to come, which is why they keep saying it's already happened.
Yeah.
We will see it when we believe it. And there you are showing us right now. See, it's already there.
We just have
to look at it and see it. So thank you for, because I'm just like, yes, yes, it is there. We are already here. So.
And I think people like you who are more aware, we are noticing it more. It won't just all of a sudden be bam and something drastic and we go to the New Earth. It's a very gradual thing, and it's been happening since around 2003. And you begin to notice things seem better, they look different, you feel different, then you really begin to realize something is happening.
Yes, you do. If you notice and you study the changes, and what I do is I follow a woman called Susan Renison, who documents a lot of these changes that are happening on the Earth, and that's how I stay tuned in to it, because you won't really see it in the mass media, and you won't really hear your neighbors talking about it per se. You won't read about it in the newspaper. You'd have to really dig. We did have news about the Kepler-22b, the Earth-like planet that finally has been found by NASA. That's been studied for a while, but that's really illuminating, and it gives us hope that perhaps this planet, from what I've read, that it's 72 degrees and it's in a zone where it can be inhabitable. It's warm enough, and so it gives us hope that there is life in other planets, and so that I think things like that are very hopeful and inspiring.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt because I know there's billions of habitable planets out there. Did you want her to repeat that?
Could you repeat that? The woman is Susan. What was her last name?
Susan Renison. She's a geophysicist and she's English, and she has a blog, which is called News of the Imbalance, and she documents many of these changes, which is where I first read about the Blue Lake in Australia and the algae, these organisms that are not normally found in that particular area seem to have migrated there, and it causes the water to sparkle, to shine, and it looks almost unreal. And there are photographs of it.
But I think I'm glad that some people are following these things. But it was last week, I think, or week before I was talking about, and I just came back from Australia, and we flew over Lake Ayers, up by Ayers Rock, and it was the first time, they said in 200 years it only happened two or three times when the lake was full of water, and that the stewardess were all trying to take pictures of it. But part of the lake was pink. And I was asking them, why is it pink? And they said it had to do with algae in the water. But see, these are things nobody sees, if only two or three times in 200 years. See, things are happening, and they have more water and rain in that part of Australia than they've ever had.
So there are things happening. That's right. And that process, I just remembered, it's called bioluminescence, and it's quite rare. And it was also seen in San Diego a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And there are photos of that as well.
Okay, well, I think a bioluminescence would be like fireflies, you know, the same thing. Because bio is, is biological, and luminescence means light.
Mm-hmm.
But be along, so it can happen in organisms.
Mm-hmm. I think it's exciting because it's a matter of knowing what to look for. So that's really good.
But I was thinking back, was it last year this time, last New Year's Eve, when they had the birds falling from the sky, and we did a show on that. And what we found out in my work was that it had to do with the shifting and the going into the new earth and the vibrations and the frequencies changing, because they said it was like an earthquake in the air that created like a shock wave. And that was what made the birds fall. So there definitely is things happening. Most people don't realize it as the vibrations change.
Right.
And we also found time has speeded up, definitely. And we are living, when I wrote the first the one book, it was 16-hour day instead of 24-hour day. It doesn't matter what the book, what the clock says, it is actually less. And Julie said what she got it, by now it's not even a 16-hour, it's a 12-hour day.
Yeah, because that was several years ago that you got that article. And
I put it in one of the books.
I wouldn't be surprised with the way, probably proportionately how it's speeding, it's probably, but that's what I heard was they said 12 hours, so.
Okay. Well, if somebody else has beeped, is that all you wanted to say?
Well, thank you, Dolores. I could talk to you for hours, but I know you have to go. Thank you so much for making those points, and I'll continue listening.
Thank you for that information. That is wonderful.
Yeah, she's going to look that up. Okay, we heard another beep. Is there another caller?
Yes, there is. Martin Horst. Hello, Dolores.
Hello.
Dolores, I am a crop circle researcher and a BBS radio host. On Monday morning, 11 a.m. PST, my radio show is called ET First Contact Radio.
Okay.
And I've been following your work, and I've seen you in many videos, and I'm very interested in your work and delighted to be on your show.
Okay. Okay.
Do you have a question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you like to come on my show in January? On ET First Contact Radio.
Well, I don't know, because I am starting to travel again in January, and we've got a really full year. It's just hard to say. Why don't you email me, and we'll go from there.
Right, okay, I will. And then there's a second question, Dolores.
Yeah?
Are you by any chance coming to the crop circles in Wiltshire in 2012?
To where?
Oh, this is so fun.
What's your...
To the crop circles in Wiltshire.
The crop circles in Wiltshire in 2012. You know what?
We are
just now opening our UK office, which happens to be in Wiltshire, and that's opening in January. And she will, when she comes over at the end of July. That is part of what she'll be doing the Glastonbury conference the end of July.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're trying to see if there's another talk over there also that we might be able to get her in on. But yes, she'll be over there during that time. Yes,
I will be delighted to meet you all there.
We have just opened our London office.
Well,
we'll be in another. Well, it's outside of London.
No, he's today. He's setting it up.
Okay,
he's there.
It's opening now, and we've already hired people to work for us in England. So our company and everything is really growing and expanding. And I go.
But that's right where it is. It's in Wiltshire.
I go to the London area, at least that area, once a year. So, yes,
okay.
We'll be there at that time.
Okay. Dolores, I have a third question and last question.
Okay.
Would you, by any chance, when we meet each other, do a regression session on me, whether or not I have been abducted by ETs?
When I'm traveling...
If you will, if you may, if you can, if it's possible.
Well, when I'm traveling...
He needs to contact us.
Okay, because when I'm traveling, I can't do sessions on the road because all I'm focusing on is that my lectures and my classes. So the only ways I do sessions are in my office in Arkansas. That's the only place I have available.
Okay, so I need to pay a visit to the United States and first... Stop will be El Dorado Hills, where BBS Radio is.
Oh, okay.
To do what?
Oh, where are you located? Are you in England?
I'm in the Netherlands.
Netherlands? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'm right now. I'm right now in a tent, and it's very cold. I'm at Occupy the Hague.
Oh, okay.
I've been to Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and The Hague. I've spoken all three of those places, and I gave a class in The Hague. So I go there.
Interesting.
Okay.
You're coming there sometime. Are you coming in 2012 to The Hague?
Not to The Hague, but actually we some of that we haven't quite set all that out yet. Netherlands was one of the places that we were wondering about. So it's a possibility.
Okay, well, I can organize an event with Purity Events in the Rai in Amsterdam. It's a huge auditorium. Or in Brussels, or in Antwerp, wherever you want. Belgium is also a possibility. So contact me if you want to organize an event in the Netherlands, and I can help you.
Well, tell you what, why don't you, because you're going to, if you want to contact us offline, you know, on the internet, and give us your information, and then we can go from there, okay?
Because we
are
possible?
Can I contact you via the website of BBS Radio, or do I need another website?
How about through DoloresCannon.com?
DoloresCannon.com. Dolores, it was delighted to be on your show, and I'm going to continue to listen via my cell phone.
And what is your name again?
My name is Martin Horst from ET First Contact Radio, Mondays on BBS.
I will remember you. We'll remember you when you make contact, okay?
Okay, because we are
I will. Martin Horst is my name.
Yeah.
I wish you a delightful show.
Okay, thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
We are still putting together the Europe part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. I never know where I'm going to be from one time to the next.
Okay.
Okay, well, then let's get back to this. I would go ahead and give out this toll-free number. It seems like they're already got it anyway, but I forgot about it. If anybody does want to call in, the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Okay, now we get back to what we were talking about was the... what was
it? I think it had to do with the schedules and everything. So.
Yeah, well, we were just beginning to talk about that because there's so much going on in my life right now anyway. But I do want to tell everyone that the new
We're talking about the cruise.
The cruise.
We told as much as I know right
okay,
now.
Okay, we're going to be posted on the website, and I'll be doing lectures and workshops on that cruise, and we also have some of our other authors are going to be on there, too.
Right.
Especially Guy Needler, who is over in England, and his book we published is The History of God, and he is a fantastic bond of information.
Absolutely. And then he'll have a second book out by that time.
Yeah, we are doing his second book, too. So anyway, that's part of what we're going to do, and that's fun things, I think, is to do the cruises because you don't have to be on a plane and fly to all these places. Okay, well, I do want to tell you, though, that the Convoluted 4 is finished, and it is out. It was delivered this week.
Yeah, on Monday. We got it on Monday.
Yeah, and we've had, we had over 5,000 that was going out to the bookstores.
Right.
That went to the distributor for the bookstores, and I told you I was writing that book when I was on the road. Every minute I had when I wasn't lecturing and doing the classes in the hotel rooms, I was finishing that book, and it was a deadline. Got it done and to the printers, and they do a miraculous job, the printers we have, of getting it out fast.
Oh, they're wonderful people.
And so it just arrived this week. And the others, over 5,000, went to the distributors, and they should be in the bookstores pretty soon. Amazon will have them also. And we had, I think we had over 1,000 pre-orders anyway. And those have all gone out. People should have those books in time for Christmas.
Yeah, we got them all out today. So
okay,
the last
of them. All the ones that went out. So people keep saying, when is Convoluted 4 coming out? And when I was in Europe, they kept saying, Amazon says it's available. And I said, I don't think so. It was still in my head and in the computer. So I did finish that one. And now I can take a little breather for a while. I don't have a deadline for another book. There'll be more books, but that's my 17th book. And people tell me they read them all. And I said, all 17? And they said, no, I didn't know you had that many. But they're all... every phase of metaphysics you could possibly think of, and I've written about, I've investigated. Okay, so we were going to...
Well, if I could put a little plug on this book, there's a special, extra special thing in there, these pictures. And that's a real novelty, one, because we didn't know if we could do that, and we were able to get that done, and they're nice color pictures of actually the energy source that is guiding us through all of these things. So it's really exciting. I think that's a valuable piece. And I think they said if people will look at those pictures, it delivers a lot of information to them. So
and it also works on their DNA. But I showed those pictures at our conference in June and also at all the lectures I've been doing in the last 5 months all over the world, I've been showing these pictures. And when I got them, it was in 2006, I think, I didn't really know what it was, and I didn't know what to do with it. But now, everything has fallen together, and this is the right time, and it makes sense. But and we don't usually do color pictures, but these they were able to do it as an insert into Convoluted 4. I'll tell them what that was about. Mm-hmm. But what happened is I had one of my clients came to see me. It was about 2006, and her daughter came, and I was going to do a session with each one. She brought these pictures, and she said they had taken them a couple of years before, I think around 2004 or 5, and they didn't know what to do with them. But she said they thought they'd give them to me because maybe I would know what to do with them. At the time, I didn't. But they were outside one night, and they saw this huge light in the sky. It was much, much brighter than a star. It wasn't as big as the moon, but it was a bright light. So they didn't know what it was, so they took pictures of it, just pointed at the camera at it, and began to take pictures. And what came out on the film was not what they saw in the sky. It didn't come out as a solid light. It came out with something that morphed and changed and moved into all different, twisted into all different kinds of shapes. And like something that's alive. And later when we had the session, that was one thing we wanted to find out, was what was this? And they said, this is like the energy that is sent to Earth at that time to help with the raising of the consciousness and the changing of the vibrations and the frequency to help the people to move into the new Earth. And it's very powerful. And they said, it looks small when you see the light, but actually it's very, very huge. It's much bigger than you could imagine because it's further away. But it's a good energy, and it goes from different planets that need help, and it helps to raise the vibration, so it helps the energy of the people. But I asked them, you know, when I was doing the session, I said, yeah, but when they looked at it, they saw it as a single light. They said, that's because this is invisible to the human eye. That's not the right words. They said the human eye cannot pick up what it really looks like.
Yeah.
That the camera picks it up, but the human eye can't.
Probably like how the digital cameras are picking up orbs. I think they're flashing into that other dimension, you know, so it's an interdimensional thing, probably.
Mm-hmm. Because the cameras now seem to be more sensitive. And they're picking up things that I think have always been there, but the human eye haven't been able to pick it up.
Because it's a dimensional thing. I'm sure of it.
With the cameras,
All these things. That's the orbs, and that's why they're catching these things. Because maybe it's their speed or something. I don't know, but they're. Remember that veil is so thin. they're able to catch through that dimension.
Because a lot of people, they're always giving me pictures of orbs. They send them to us with the email. We get them in the mails. And every time I go to a lecture, somebody will come up to me and say, you want to see my scrapbook or my photo album of all these pictures of orbs that they've taken. So now everybody's getting pictures of orbs, and they even have conferences just devoted to orbs. But what I found out in the last several years when I asked about orbs, they said it's just energy. It could be... You could say it would be an energy being, because it is
we all are.
It's
probably what we look like to another dimension, is we're an energy.
Yeah.
You know?
But they said the sphere is the most perfect shape anyway, that this is what a lot of things look like, especially beings, because it's a perfect shape. But it's life. It is energy. But it's nothing to do with UFOs or anything like that. It's just energy. But people have sent me pictures like this in the past, and they were associating them with UFOs. This one that has, it said it morphs, it moves. And it's really strange to look at the pictures. And but one of the lectures, they said, well, how did that have a series, you know, how was it, series or what? And I said, all they did was point the camera at this light and just flash several pictures. And they didn't know what was going to be there until it was developed, because this was taken to a photo place and have it developed. It wasn't the digital. It wasn't the instant. But people have sent me other photographs like that. One man in Sydney sent me several that he took out over the harbor at night. And they were associating them with UFOs. So I asked them that, and they said, no, 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 it is not a UFO. It hasn't got anything to do with that. This is a living entity, a living energy. It's very loving, and it's nothing to be afraid of, but it is here to help raise the consciousness and help people adjust. They're being affected whether they know it or not. You don't have to know these things. This is part of what we were talking about earlier, that Things are changing. Things are getting better. And part of it has to do with this kind of energy. So it's out there, and we don't even know it, but it is changing everybody. And it's not going against free will. It's here to help, because we need all the help we can right now as we move into this new vibration. But we have the pictures, and I'm saying, how are we going to put them in the book? So they made an insert of the photograph, the pictures of this object, whatever it is, and put it in there. And I have the transcript to say what they said it was. So it's interesting anyway.
What?
First time we've done anything like that.
Yeah, and they are powerful pictures. I remember the first time I saw them, and I was just holding the pictures, and I was feeling the energy off of them, and it was like I really couldn't place what it was, but I knew it was something very important.
And they said it does affect the DNA of the person just by looking at it. But I can see now, when I got them, I had no idea what it was, and even when I got the session, it didn't make sense, the transcript, so I wasn't ready for it yet. So I'm still evolving, I'm still growing. My work is a living thing, and it's constantly growing. So I knew that something would be done with it someday, but I didn't know what it was going to be. So that is in the book. But there's a whole lot of things in the book that are different. But, you know, every one of my convoluted books goes a little further, has another piece of information, another concept, another theory that I hadn't thought about. But this book was going to be too big. It was going to be over.
It was not 900 pages at one point.
Yeah. And I thought we could put all this information into one book. And then we found out how big it was going to be. And he said, no, I don't think that's possible. And the deadline I had on me, I wouldn't have been ready yet. So when I was on the trip, I decided to pull out about over 300 pages. They were on one topic. And I pulled that out. And I said, we'll just save that for the next book. Then we were able to get it done, and it's still a 600-page book.
Right.
With taking that out. But I had it divided up into three sections. Because, you know, the information just keeps coming. In the first section, I call it Beyond the Veil, where I was talking about more information about life after death and life on the spirit side. I wrote the book Between Death and Life years ago, and that book is still out there, and it's still in demand, and it's in over 20 languages. That book was about what happens when you die and where you go and what it's like on the other side. So all these years, I'm still getting information from the clients on what it's like on the spirit side. And nothing has ever been contradicted. It's always the same information about what happens. So I decided to put that in one section, because I didn't feel it was enough for a book on its own. The second section, and this is the one that I took out, had to do with searching for lost knowledge or sacred knowledge, because I have many sessions of people who go back to times when they had a lot of knowledge, ancient knowledge. They were different priests and priestesses and secret mystery schools. All down through the ages in the world, whenever having that knowledge was dangerous, and there's always people that would be out of place in their town or in their time, having been able to heal, being able to use herbs, and people don't understand, they would usually kill them because they didn't understand what they were doing. So I have a lot of sessions like that, and I was going to put them in one separate section. And then the third section was about the more convoluted material. But it was just getting too big. So I decided to take out all the part about the sacred knowledge and the hidden knowledge and save that to go in another book.
Uh-huh.
So I've already got a big hunk that's going to be in another book. And it's okay because it does flow. We have the one section now on the life after death, and then we go into the convoluted universe material after that. And that's where we still have some more very strange concepts.
Very.
Oh, I know. They keep saying, you know, I write these books for people who want their minds spent like pretzels. Well, that's what's happening. I'm going to go into the backdrop people.
I thought you were going to do about your past lives. Which one takes this amount of time?
I was trying to figure out, because we do want to tell you what's in the book. Well, I'll tell about my past lives. Maybe that will take up some of this time. Every time I give a lecture, people always ask me, do you know anything about your own past lives? And yes, I do, because if you're in this line of work, you eventually want to find out about it anyway. And especially in the beginning, it's when I was really wanting to know a lot of information. And when I was developing this technique that I use, I had a lot of past lives done by other people. So I know about 8 of mine. I don't need it anymore. I found out why I'm doing what I'm doing, the kind of work I'm doing, and I found out my connection with my family, and then it just got to where I don't need it. I have some people coming to me, which I call past life junkies. All they want to do is have past lives and continue to have them, you know, sessions again and again just to find out about past lives. They're not really looking for information. What would you call it, entertainment or
who was
curiosity?
What was I? Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, the vast majority of them, you weren't anything. Mm-hmm. 90% of the past lives are dull, boring, mundane, what I call digging potatoes lives, because you may be a farmer out in the field or a native in a jungle where nothing really happens. I had one man after one session, he said, well, I sure wasn't a pharaoh in Egypt, was I? So it's very rare that you would ever have anybody who is going to be a session traumatic or dramatic. The vast majority of the ones I do, I just give them the tape and I say, okay, you know, there's something in there, even in a dull, mundane, boring life, there's something that they need to know that connects to their life right now. But if people are doing it to look for excitement, it's very rare that that's going to happen. But a lot of them think, oh boy, this is going to be exciting. I think those people, their life must be very dull now.
Yeah, they're just looking, like you said, entertainment or escape or something. So they have some reason.
They think, well, maybe my other lives were more exciting than the life I'm living right now. So they'd rather escape into the other past lives. So it's a tool, it's a valuable tool to find information, but you don't really need to keep it up and keep it up. Because they've told me before, focus on now and the future and moving forward and improving yourself. Don't worry about the past. That if you focus on the past, you will stay in the past. So it's good to have the information and use it, but don't stay there. So anyway, I did have in the beginning past lives because I was curious like everybody else. And then I also found out what I didn't like that the other hypnotists were doing, so I changed that whenever I developed my own technique. But one of the most important ones, and I bring this up in the book, I have a chapter on my own past lives that explains why I'm doing what I'm doing now. Was a past life I had at the Library of Alexandria in Egypt. And most of you probably know the Library of Alexandria was a depository of all the knowledge at that time. It had scrolls and books that had everything in it. It was tremendous knowledge. And then it was destroyed, though. I can't remember when it was, but it was destroyed by people that came in that wanted to destroy the knowledge. I don't remember if it was Christians or if it was the Muslims. I'd have to go back in the history and find out. But they destroyed it and burned the library. And when they did, there was a tremendous amount of knowledge was lost at that time. And that still makes me very unhappy and sad to think of knowledge being lost. And that's why I treasure books. I love books. And to me, the greatest achievement of my career was when my books were put into libraries. That meant more to me than having them in bookstores. But With the knowledge, that's why when I said this at a lecture one time, somebody said, well, do you have to try to rewrite the whole library? Because my main concern is getting the knowledge back. To recapture the lost knowledge, I'm always saying I'm a reporter, an investigator, a researcher of lost knowledge. I got to get it back. But in that lifetime, I wasn't anybody important. I was a man, but I was like a caretaker of the scrolls. And I couldn't even read. But my job was to take care of these scrolls in the library, and these other scholars would come in, and I would give them what scrolls they would want. So they would sit at the tables, and they would go over these written records. And I remember on the top shelf in the library was where the most valuable and the oldest scrolls were held. And I had one man in particular that I remembered that always came in black robes and would sit at one of the tables, and I would knew which ones he wanted, and I would always bring them to him. But that was my job, just taking care of the scrolls, and I loved the knowledge, but I couldn't read it. Well, then I was there whenever the library was destroyed, and they came in and started burning them. They took all of the scrolls and were pulling them off of the shelves and throwing them into the middle of the floor. And I know I was just, I became hysterical when they began grabbing the ones off the top shelf. Those were the most valuable, and throwing everything into the middle of the room and set fire to it. And that was just horrible to me that somebody could do something like that. So I grabbed all the scrolls I could and was running out of the building, you know, crying and everything. And as I got out of the building, I was run over by a chariot holding on to my scrolls. So I said that explained my love of knowledge, my wanting back lost knowledge, and writing the books to try to bring it back. But as another part of this story, was after I was beginning to write and beginning to travel, this one man, his name was Drago, he invited me to come to Bulgaria, to come to Sofia in Bulgaria, and because the books were being translated into Bulgarian. It's my first Nostradamus books. They were coming out in Bulgarian. They wanted me to come there. And, of course, my son especially said, Mom, you can't not go to Bulgaria. Look where it is on the map. It's just right across the border from Yugoslavia. And that was at the time we had the war going on in Yugoslavia. And he said, it's not safe to go there. And I said, well, I'll be all right. I just think it's an opportunity to go. So I went. And it was amazing. Because when I got off of the plane, it was like a rock star. We had all of these people and these newspapers and cameras and everything, and it was like, whoa, what's going on here? And I just walked out into the lobby, and this one reporter shoved a microphone in my face and said, what do you think of Bulgaria? I said, I don't know. I just got here. But during that whole stay, we had press conferences that were like the president's press conferences. There'd be all these reporters, everybody wanting to ask me questions. Nobody had ever heard in that part of the world of doing hypnosis the way I did it for past lives. They didn't know anything about past lives. Now, this is right after Bulgaria had succeeded, had left the Soviet Union. So it was very poor, it was in very bad conditions. All the infrastructure had been destroyed whenever they pulled away from the Soviet Union. And, of course, all they did was have books to read. So it was very, that time right then is when I got in there. Well, during that trip, I was questioned for 2 hours by scientists and astrologers and professors because they had never heard of using hypnosis for past life regression. They said, they're not allowed to teach anything that was not taught in the universities. So they hadn't heard of this. So they, you know, I said, well, I get in trouble then for doing this. And they said, no, because you're a foreigner. So anyway, this is the way it was over there. And during that time I was there, there was this Russian filmmaker, this woman, was doing a documentary, and she wanted to do it on me. So, in addition to everything else, I had to go to this hotel to do the filming for the documentary. Well, the morning we were going to do one part of the filming, Drago comes to our room, we're getting ready to leave, and he says, they want you to do a session. They want you to do it as a demonstration so they can film it. And I said, well, I always feel uncomfortable with that because you don't know what's going to come out. And you don't know what's going to happen, if anything is going to happen. And I said, well, who would I do it with? And he said he volunteered me to do him. Now, his English is good. I could understand him. And I knew him, so he thought maybe that would make him feel more comfortable. And so he agreed to do the session. So we get to the hotel, and we go in. They've got the cameras and everything all set up. And we're going to say we're going to do the session. And the woman said, she brings this young girl out. She said, this is the one you're going to do the session on. Beautiful blonde girl with shorts, sexy looking. And he said, she's the one you're going to do the session on. And I said, but does she speak English? Does she understand English? And she said, "Do you speak English?" And I was thinking, it's probably just because it would make good film. But I was thinking, I don't think so. I don't think it'll be a good session, because if you have this language barrier, it's going to be harder. So anyway, I told him Drago had agreed to do it, and we were going to do him. Now, Drago's a nice-looking man. He's got a beard, and he's good-looking, but he's definitely not sexy. So I think, and that was what they were thinking. So anyway, I agreed to do it. Now, afterwards, I think they might have thought we cooked all this up beforehand and arranged this session, but we had no idea what was going to happen. So he's laying on the bed with all the cameras around him, and we go into the session. He goes back to the lifetime. He is at the Alexandrian Library. And I'm looking, my daughter was sitting in back of the cameras, and I kept looking at her without saying anything, like, because she knew the story. Like, oh my gosh, he is saying the same things that I had seen. I kept asking him questions to find out, are you at the same place? He was the man in the black robes, the scholar, and he was into numerology and astrology. He would come to the library to read the ancient scrolls. So we knew each other in that lifetime, although we didn't know. I just took care of the scrolls and gave it to him. But he's going through the entire lifetime, and I said, we're there at the same time. So he moved forward to when the library was burnt, and he was also in the building. So he's doing the same thing I'm doing. He's trying to grab as many scrolls as he could and to get out of the library as it's burning. And as he's running toward the door, the rafters, the ceiling starts falling in, and a huge rafter fell on him and killed him. And later, he was saying, was the day afterwards, he said, I'm almost afraid to say anything, but he said, I have one part of my back that has hurt me all my life. And he said, since the session, it didn't hurt anymore. It was gone. But anyway, during the session, he was running out of the library, and he was killed there. So it meant more to me than it would have to the people filming it, because they didn't know the whole story. He said, he was aware there were other people around and the cameras going. Otherwise, he wanted to cry. He was so emotional about it, but he couldn't do it. But so anyway, that was our connection. And afterwards, we're walking back to the hotel, and I said, boy, do I have a story to tell you, that we were there at the same time. And when I did leave and we said goodbye at the airport, I said, isn't it strange we had to go, 100, 700, 800 years and halfway around the world to come in contact again? Because here I am trying to bring knowledge back. He's doing the same thing by trying to bring books and speakers into Bulgaria to bring knowledge that way. We were bringing knowledge that people didn't know. So he's doing his part, too, of trying to bring knowledge back. And while I was there in Bulgaria, these scientists and all of them, they had an association of phenomena. They were some of the ones responsible for me to coming. And they said every year they would give an award, and it's a beautiful statue. It's like giving an Oscar to someone that they thought was making advancements in the field of psychic phenomena. So the last day I was there, they had a TV show, and they gave me the award. And I was totally surprised, because it's the first time anyone who was not Bulgarian had ever been awarded the award, especially an American and a foreigner. And they said they gave it to me for the highest research and the highest advancement in the research of psychic phenomena. And so I treasure that. It's metal. I didn't know I was even going to get through the metal detectors in the airport to bring it back. And so it's called the Orpheus Award. So I was given that when I left. But a follow-up on that story, it was a couple of years later when Drago called me and we were talking about what had happened. And he said after I left and the documentary was filmed in Bulgaria, they got the TV stations were flooded with calls wanting to know, what is this past life regression, hypnosis? What is this all about? And they wanted to have more information about it. So Drago said, now, after I'd left and there was this interest in it, now the scientists were teaching it, and they were using past life regression. Of course, I wonder if they were doing it from the film where they showed me doing it. I don't know how they were doing it, but they are doing it. So I think I'm responsible for maybe entering a whole new way of thought into an entire country. Who knows? This was over 10 years ago. It was in the 90s when I went over there. So who's to say, but you never know what you're going to be doing. But I brought that story up in the Convoluted Four, and I can talk about another one next week. We're going to kind of go, well, next week we're not, it's Christmas. But I'm going to try to go through some of these things that are in the new book, The Convoluted Universe, Book 4. But people do want to know about my past lives, and I think that was proof, in a way, having it verified through somebody else. So the book is available now, and if you want to check on our website, DolorisCannon.com or OzarkMountain.com, or call the office. It's 1-800-935-0045. And it also will have my schedule of where we're going to be speaking.
We have the beginnings of it. I have just the first ones on there, and then we're lining up the others. As we get them more solidified, they'll be up there too.
Because we're beginning to set the whole year. If people know where I'm going to go, and there's a lot happening.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to be writing more books, especially that hunk that I took out, but I'm not
going to... I was going to tell people, don't despair. There's talk. We're not putting a deadline on her, but there's talk of it being that book being out by the end of next year.
Let's hope. But I'm not going to have deadlines like that. That's too hard. It's too hard to work with. Too much pressure. Okay, so I think it's coming up to the end of the hour, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight and thank the callers for calling in. Next week, we're going to play, it's Christmas Eve, so we will play...
As Seth said, it's Christmas Eve Eve.
Is that what he said?
It's the 23rd, yes.
23rd,
Eve,
okay.
Yes.
Every Christmas Eve, I've been doing this show now 6 years. Every Christmas Eve, we always play the same show. And it's the one I did in 2005 in the very beginning on Christmas Eve. It's the story of the Star of Bethlehem that I have in my books, Jesus and the Essenes. So I won't be live. They're going to play that so we can get ready for Christmas. Mm-hmm. But everybody out there, you all have a nice Christmas, and I'll be talking to you the week after that. New Year's Eve.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Everybody have a nice Christmas and enjoy yourself. And thanks for listening tonight. Good night.
Good night.